This interview is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. In Practice is an independent publisher, and all opinions expressed by guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of In Practice.
Good day.
Hello.
So, to rewind 7-8 years as a preface to our conversation today about primary research methods, when we first met, we got on the phone. You were working, you'd just taken a job at a hedge fund, and you were also in the process of discussing, learning about, negotiating for a role at the firm that I was working at the time, Third Bridge. And I told you, or let me put it differently, you asked me, all right, so what does the day-to-day look like? And I said, you get to read for 4 or 5 hours a day, and you spend your rest of your time speaking to operators. And I don't think you quite believed me at the time. But this whole notion of spending a ton of time in the field, that got you interested.
Unlimited budget as well, basically.
An unlimited fieldwork budget.
Mm. On whatever you want, like not some portfolio manager telling you what to work, what companies to work on. You can choose what you want. With the
right. So freedom over your time and an unlimited fieldwork budget. Now, something in you obviously had a sense that there was something worth investigating and rolling the dice on. When did you realize the power of spending a lot of time in the field with operators? When did that sink in as to what you could do with that?
I'm not sure exactly when, but I guess I've always been fascinated with how the world works, and you know, what better way to learn about it through those people actually building stuff or doing stuff. It didn't necessarily have to be business. It could be in sport, you know, going straight to the primary source of those actually playing or executing the sport. And so I've always been fascinated in learning about how the world works through business. And you know, it's a kind of an interesting combination of psychology, sociology, mathematics, you know, and just human understanding human nature. So I've always been interested in reading about autobiographies and learning about people actually doing stuff. But actually, I guess when I first started doing research, you know, in my, I guess, early 20s, I was always focused on reading, you know, 10Ks and investor materials and stuff. But I think I never really fully understood the power of primary research and what we call that today until I actually started professionalizing how I speak to operators. And because everyone knows, I mean, like, you don't have to be a rocket scientist, right? If you listen to someone, a great CEO or someone who's built something for 30 years, right, it blows you, you know, it's great, you know. So that's not necessarily unique. And there's also a big difference, by the way, between speaking to current executives and former operators. So when I speak about primary research, I'm talking specifically about, you know, the art of conversation with former operators and professionalizing that process, because everyone can go and talk to management and, you know, get wooed by them and be excited. But actually, probably a funny couple of stories come to mind. And when I first read, when the penny dropped, I guess it's pre-Tegus, which is probably a healthy reference for most people. You know, we would interview former executives live. I think, you know, some of the companies, Verbridge and Guidepoint, still do that. But we would interview executives live, and hedge funds and private equity funds, PMs and directors would dial in and listen to, you know, if they had a big position in the company or under debt or something. I think one of the first one was just, I done an interview on Amazon Fulfillment Network. I can't remember who it was with. And it was like very just simple, like, I just want to know how this works. And this was back in 2016 when they first started, you know, really, you know, spending CapEx and building this out. Which is funny because I'm still learning about this today. It's not stuff that I'm on, you know, last year or early this year. And I just simply walked through how the fulfillment network was being built out and how it worked, how a unit flowed through that network, what that meant for cost, you know, speed, competitive advantages. And I think we had a ridiculous number of attendees for that call. I think, you know, over 100 or whatever. And I was just like shocked. I was thinking, I was fairly young, I was thinking, well, don't you guys already know this? Surely you're doing all this work as well, right? You know, obviously, that was an example of just how powerful the work could be if done properly. Obviously, you have to get the right executive, ask the right questions. But, and you know, and it was funny because another quick example was New Look, which I think might, you probably remember better than me, but it might be one of the first ones or early with the former CFO. And this was a New Look, so like a UK mid-market fashion retailer. Private equity have flipped it many times. It was over-levered. I think the bonds were trading in the 80s. And, you know, and the guys that owned the debt were kind of harshing themselves. And then we get on the call with a former CFO, and I just walk through, you know, simply like the cash flow dynamics, the working capital profile, how that worked, the product, you know, how they had to buy inventory up front and that how that gets discounted and all that kind of stuff. And then we received a few emails from the private equity guys, you know, that owned the debt that were slamming us because they, you know, that we were sharing details that were impacting the price of the bond. So I think it was just really those two, for some reason, stick out in my mind of like, wow, like if you do this properly, yeah, it can be really helpful and insightful. And obviously we can discuss how many layers there are of this in terms of choosing the right executive, how to structure questions, how to listen. But I guess you probably remember more than me about those New Look or Amazon calls. You know, they're the two that stuck out in my mind in the early days.
Alistair Miller and Nadia Shurabura.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was, I watched your eyes light up after that chat with Alistair Miller. That was actually the first interview you did when you joined Third Bridge within the first week of you joining, actually.
Straight in the deep end. I'm 11 retailer.
And that's it. And we set it up so that you'd have also a crowd on the call, given the topic. And the nature of the executive. So there was just, you know, picking someone that was really appropriate. But then that style that you cultivated, that way of working, it then heavily influenced me and it changed my style of working in your willingness to look at a system, read what you could on the system, develop a set of working hypotheses as to how the system worked. How the structure, the business model, the flow of a unit through the system, unit economics, to methodically ask really simple questions early in the process. Of course, later down the line, you're teasing out nuance with really specific people and very specific angles. But the surprising power of methodically, step by step, working out with operators how a system works. We're probably both still amazed at how often that process is skipped by people who make assumptions or just take, you know, management team's word, which is often well-intentioned, but senior management often is operating at multiple layers of abstraction on a process.
Yeah, that's why I said earlier that it's very, very different interviewing a current management team or having a meeting with a current management team and a former executive. The narrative, the framework, the psychology, the bias, the body language, the tone, like everything is completely different. And so appreciating the difference in bias, obviously both people have biases, so appreciating that and navigating that is an art in itself, which we can discuss another time. But yeah, I think looking back on it, I mean, it seemed just very intuitive to me. I didn't know what I was doing like back then. This was kind of how I like to approach it. But, you know, if I think about it now, as I've thought about over the years in terms of trying to really professionalize it, it's really not too complicated, but it's just very difficult to do. And I think at a high level, like everyone, in terms of why do you do primary research, i.e. why do you go out into the field and speak to operators, executives to learn more about a company? Everyone's doing it for the same reason, right? We're all doing it to understand, to build knowledge, build a conviction, to eventually make an investment or make a decision. But how you go about that differs greatly among investors. And there are also different types of field work depending on the opportunity and thesis in question. But the way I look at it is quite simple, but very hard to execute. And I think the first approach really is to learn from first principles. And that's that kind of methodical approach that you kind of mentioned. And that's really like quite exploratory in nature. You need a huge dose of humility. And it's really about learning the fundamentals, really going from first principles, go down to the unit level, you know, understand the operating rhythm of the industry, you know, the culture and the sales process or the flow and the people involved in a certain business or industry. And then, you know, and then once you've got that framework or understand of the system and I guess industry or business, you then move on to really kind of seeking disconfirming evidence, right? And I, you know, building conviction via seeking that disconfirming evidence. And, you know, and to be honest, like if I look now at my work, like a huge part is still the first part, right? It's still exploratory, it's still learning, it's still, you know, and it kind of never ends. I mean, like I said, I done that call in 2016 on Amazon Fulfillment Network. Well, like the network's completely different today. I keep doing those all the time to keep updating and learning. And then when you might have a deep understanding of a space, I don't know, in Transdime or Amazon or Constellation, you can go very, very niche or look for some disconfirming evidence, whether that might be, you know, when the short report came out about Transdime, you might want to focus specifically on pricing and how they price for customers because you have that framework and understanding of the company to kind of build upon that. So I think, you know, we can talk about the incentive structure around, you know, maybe the investment community and why that makes it challenging to work in a certain way later on. But I think if I look back on the process, it's really just two things. It's learning from first principles and then building conviction / you know, seeking disconfirming evidence.
I want to touch on the, and this is, I mean, it's part of this topic, but this question of the purpose of field work and how we've come to think about that, because you will meet a lot of people that talk about how they want to confirm assumptions. They want to get out and validate a thesis, right? It's quite a common way that people talk about using primary research services to facilitate conversations with, by the way, I mean, you've mentioned former execs, but we've got suppliers, distributors, customers, different, you know, huge varieties of customers very often, right? That one needs to get a sense for. So let's get into this question of the purpose of the work. Like, how would you, and for us at In Practice, how do we define the purpose of the work?
I think, like I said, for us, we're in a pretty unique spot at the moment. But I think, like I said, it's really about learning how the industry works. Right? It's about learning from first principles about this. And then, yeah, that's a huge amount of work. And I think, like you said, a lot of the challenge is that where the structure of a fund or the nature of markets or investor psychology can skew people to think fairly short term, which then skews the research process towards looking to confirm certain ideas or opinions fairly quickly and not doing the upfront work on, you know, really how does this business actually work or how does this industry work. So yeah, I think that, like, for us, it's about learning from first principles and using this as a gateway to truly understand the mechanics of an industry, you know, the drivers of unit economics of a product or a certain business, and then let the conviction and let these insights come out naturally and organically without shoehorning your ideas or your opinions through the process, which I think is where, you know, potentially mistakes can come.
Well, there's I think for many years we'd encounter and we had to work with this temptation in ourselves is there's, you go into the work and you've got this idea of some executive out there that's going to help you get the most in the least time. And you have this perhaps an early bias towards speaking to, or certainly earlier in our careers, we'd want to speak to reasonably senior people, right? Who could give you a bird's eye view on a number of aspects of the system. And I think pretty quickly we noticed the significant limitations of working with senior people early instead of, you know, if you are following that first principles methodology, actually having very, very specific conversations about specific aspects of a business with the person responsible for the process, not the person managing the person, right? At two levels above the actual process, who, you know, are typically very eloquent and they'll always be happy to tell you about what they think about these things. And they've got, you know, there's a senior title and they're, you know, there's all these attractive aspects of these senior profiles superficially, but actually this question of going out and finding the person responsible for the work and being willing to spend the time on that, to your point, you go into these calls and you might spend, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour on some really specific aspect of the process. And you can tell from the beginning, like your understanding of the situation is unlikely to be revolutionized. You're not going to come out of the call with some like home run insight that you can take out to the world. Now, funnily enough, you know, you actually through this process can get closer to more durable insights, we might argue, but you can't really predict them. Like, say more about that shift in thinking towards being willing to work with very specific people on very specific questions to reduce the, you know, the ambition of the scope of the call. Yeah. Say more about that.
Well, I think, like, it just comes back down to the, I guess, the philosophy of the research process, right? If you're truly trying to understand from first principles, I mean, like, take bioprocessing now, right? We've done it. You know, everyone knows it's kind of mission critical, it's sticky, it gets specced in. Like, but what does that actually mean? Like, and are you willing to go through? And I mean, like, bioprocessing, again, it has upstream, it has downstream equipment, it has, you know, reagents, it has different forms of equipment. And Danaher owns various different types of products across that process. So, and you can look at the market share and the economics and tell that it's sticky and it's profitable. But, like, how far are you willing to go back and truly understand that? And most people, you know, most people will think maybe that just doesn't matter for them because they're going to own it and, you know, everyone's talking now about destocking and it's, you know, part of kind of a bit of a cycle and that's going to turn. Maybe that's what they care about. Everyone's talking about that and that's what the companies are talking about. So at least the way I approach it is I want to understand exactly what these products are, how customers use them, what the FDA approval process is for chromatography, which is a core part of Danaher's portfolio, what it means to own chromatography resins and equipment with filtration equipment and consumables. And so, you know, there's different reasons why. I mean, firstly, it's just very humbling. It's very difficult, you know, to go back and then actually spend the time and understand, you know, the chemistry of these resins and how they manufacture these monoclonal antibodies and how they bind to certain proteins and, you know, and the intellectual property in that makes it difficult, i.e. the barriers to entry. Why a future competitor might not be able to take share from Danaher. That's also, it's difficult because you're constantly reminded of how much you don't know. It can be quite uncomfortable. And also it can be quite easy to get lost in the details and stuff that doesn't matter. So I think part of it is just a philosophical question of how you approach the research. It's also based on the duration of your capital, your investment, you know, methodology. If you're looking to own these businesses for 1 to 2 years, then maybe all you should look at is the destocking. You know, most people are paid on a yearly or you get bonused every year, or maybe look at raising more money after 2-3 years, and they might switch out of Danaher because of raise, you know, or whatever. But if you're looking to find an asset you want to own for decades and compound for a very long period of time, it's probably worthwhile to understand exactly how these products are specced in and why they're so durable. You know, that's the kind of approach that we take. But as we've seen over the years, like, a lot of the industry just focuses on fairly shorter term stuff and just assumes that these chromatography resins are so durable because they always have been, which may be a good rule of thumb, but, you know, it kind of is until it isn't.
I think there's something that keeps striking me more deeply as time goes by is how lucky we were early in our careers to have a research process that was structured in a purely open-ended way, that as you joined the team and were hired at Third Bridge, you weren't mandated. And by the way, there's a shadow side to this too, or there's net pluses and minuses to this, but on the gift this was for us and on the way in which it helped, the fact that you, in an open-ended way, could just go out and learn and didn't have to come back with some, you know, buy, sell recommendation, some view that had to be conclusive at the end of whatever, a month or 2 month or 6 month process, right? That you could actually unleash curiosity. Like, that lives with us to today. And it's fundamentally affected the way we invest our own capital is and have hardwired a system that is rooted in learning. And then there might be an insight or there might not be. And there might be an investment outcome over time, right? Where we feel like, and of course, we've attracted a lot of people that work like this, that fundamentally are research first, that are looking to understand. And there's an investment decision made at some point down the line when something just punches you in the face because it looks like a really obvious opportunity given what you've come to understand. But that process, that research first process, feels really important.
Yeah, but I think it also depends just on your psychology, because you can do research and still think you know. And still think you have answers, right? And actually the biggest risk with this business is that you just have, like, you know, you're subject to authority bias. And like, you speak to one guy and all of a sudden you're an expert on bioprocessing. Like, I have no clue. I've never sold a resin in my life. I've never even seen one. I'm like, you know, so I think I thought about this a lot and I don't know, maybe it's just genetic. Maybe it's just, nature, mainly nature rather than nurture in terms of, can you be unemotional about this? Can you not, be attached to your ideas that you know?
Can or unemotional about how much you don't know, exactly. And not be embarrassed about it?
Yeah, and I think you're right partly in that the environment we were in, so we were not working, we were not allocating capital. And so it's partly nurture, partly nature, partly the environment. I think there's a genetic disposition to being not emotionally attached to your ideas, not wanting to know, not wanting to look like you know, and being willing to be to look stupid to understand. And then it's just the benefit, the huge benefit we had was that we wasn't in an environment where we had to allocate capital. And that means that it crafted an environment where we can not feel like we have to get an answer, and also that we don't have to have, we didn't have $100 million in a company that we had to go and explain that it was the best business in the world and get attached to our ideas. And so I think that early in our career potentially was helpful. But I think overall it's probably just genetic. I think are you actually hardwired to learn and be objective and be willing to be wrong and have an open mind? It's really, really difficult.
Well, and to be clear, I mean, I'll speak for myself. I feel pretty comfortable speaking for you in that you want to know, like we want to know, but the journey to knowing, just wanting to know isn't enough, right? At least the process that we've ended up working within and the way we've ended up structuring our time is really this honoring this open-ended research process, this question of how do you actually find out how something works and realizing that you can't force things, that there's a lot of information that you have to earn in the same way that an operator will have, there's things that they'll have learned over decades that they've worked pretty hard to earn. These insights just don't come flying out of senior management's, now and again, you will find a management team that just tells you how things work and it really is how things work. But for the most part, you certainly can't have the level of conviction they have, right? From just listening to that high level summary of the insight. So back to this point of, wanting to know, but holding this desire to know lightly, being humble.
It's a paradox, right? It's a complete paradox in this, and this is why it's so difficult. It's you need a certain dose of humility to appreciate that you can never be so sure, right? And most people will understand, like, nothing's ever certain, right? The scientific approach, you can never say it's 100% certain, rarely. And so there's a certain dose of humility required to build understanding about something and truly understand the space from first principles. But then on the other hand, you need real conviction to put hundreds or billions of dollars to work. And this is where like the paradox comes, where you need to have humility that you and an open mind to update your priors and keep learning and understanding an industry or a space. But you also need to have the conviction to make the investment, and not being attached to that is also quite difficult. Because when you have the conviction, you know, you want to tell your friends, you tell your investors why this company is the best thing since sliced bread, and pounding that into you whilst also keeping an open mind and keep learning. I think that's what's potentially genetic. And that's just some people are predisposed to doing this, to being very, you know, strong opinions loosely held, right? It's super difficult to do. And then, you know, we haven't even talked about actually the process of that, right? Just doing an interview is not good enough. Like, actually, how do you structure the interview? How do you ask questions? How do you navigate that to really have an open mind? Like, this is, it's an art form. It's very difficult.
So I think for today, and that's hopefully an introduction to our community, many of which will already be deeply aware of this, but for anyone listening in that is not familiar with In Practice, an introduction to how we think about the work and approach it. In the next episode, we are going to speak about how we actually go about the minutiae of the work, how we structure projects, how we ask questions, how we work with our team at In Practice. And we'll have a bit of fun with that next time. Thanks for listening in.
As always, this is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for investment decisions. Please do your own research.